Welcome to Inspirational Tales. When my guests on this podcast experience the most challenging times of their lives, they use these hardships to learn, grow, and better themselves. And as a result, they are now thriving in life. Their stories are ones of resilience, strength, and overcoming adversity. So sit back and join me as we celebrate them turning their challenges into triumphs. My guest on this episode is Holly Scott. In 2017, when she was only 22 years old, Holly was involved in a major car accident. She sustained many injuries, including a brain injury, and has required multiple surgeries since then. Although her recovery is still continuing today, Holly has come a long way since the day of the accident, and she is now using her experience to help others. She is a mentor to those with brain injuries, and this year, in 2022, she was named the first road safety ambassador for the South Australian Police. But Holly is only just getting started. Having found her direction and purpose in life, she has many plans for the future, and I really hope you enjoy hearing her story. Hi, Holly. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. How are you?
Hi, good, thank you.
So today we're going to speak about an accident that you had in 2017. But yes. To start with, I always like to go back to the beginning. So can you please go back to before you had the accident, say your early 20s? I know you were only 22 when you had the accident.
Yes.
But before that, and can you tell us a bit about what your life was like back then and what you were doing back then?
So back then, before my accident, 2 weeks before my accident, I was celebrating my 22nd birthday. I kind of thought at that time that, I don't know, like I kind of thought I had everything. I thought I just got into a new relationship. I had best friends. Everything was kind of falling into place for me at that point. I just started a new full-time job. But at the same time, now looking back at it, I did go job to job. I went retail to retail shop. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I didn't have any direction to what I wanted to do. Yeah, I was kind of, you know, still going out, partying, just having fun being in my young teens, or in my early 20s.
I think a lot of people are kind of like that at that age, though. You don't always necessarily know what you want to do with your life or what the next, even as you get older.
So yeah, don't. No.
But yeah, so on that day in 2017, when you did have that car accident, do you actually remember what happened, or has to be pieced together based on what other people have told you and what you've seen?
I think the brain is an amazing thing. I think it blocks it out because it knows you don't need to remember it. I remember calling my boyfriend at the time that I just finished. I was on my way to his house, and that is all I remember. The next thing, I remember waking up in hospital. So when I talk about my accident, it's from what people have told me within that space of him finding me, well, within it. I have heard the voice recording, the 000 phone recording of when my partner found me in my car, and it's traumatizing for me.
Yeah.
It's him freaking out on the phone. I'm freaking out in the background screaming. It's a lot. It's a lot to hear, because that is there in that moment of what I actually went through, even though I don't remember it. We share that now to school, so I'm constantly hearing that. It's a lot, but it's healing for me sharing it as well.
So what actually happened on that day based on what you now know?
So I just finished work one night in Norwood. I called Johnny, my then boyfriend that I just finished, and I was on my way to his house to Echunga in the Adelaide Hills. It reached that time I should have been there, but I wasn't. He rang me 4 times and I didn't answer. He had a gut feeling, got into his car and came looking for me.
Do you know how long it was before he went looking for you? As in, like, say you were meant to, I'm not sure what time you were meant to go, say 6 o'clock you would have showed up. Like, how long it took him to then start looking?
It took a bit. I remember he was constantly looking outside the window, waiting for my car to come in the driveway. He went to his dad at one point and he was like, Holly's not home, I'm a bit worried for her. It's funny that anything could have changed him coming and looking for me. The dad was like, yeah, go have a look for her. And he was just expecting me to drive past the other way like nothing was wrong. And even to this day, my brother can't believe, you know, if his girlfriend's late, she's late. He doesn't go looking for her.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact he went looking for me, yeah, it's crazy. But he was, yeah, expecting me to drive past the other way like nothing was wrong. And he found me. I was a street away from his house with my car wrapped around a tree. So he put his hazard lights on, got out of the car and rushed over to me. I was conscious. I knew it was him, but I couldn't move or speak. I was stuck in that car. I overcorrected and I hit the tree on my side of the car, taking the full impact. He called the ambulance and they needed to know the closest address. So So Inner Chungra in the Adelaide Hills, it's not like the city. It's not house, house, house. So he had to run up the road to find the closest address. He hated leaving my car because my car was hissing at that point. Mm-hmm. And in the end, the whole street was blocked off. The fire trucks had to pull my car off the tree, cut the roof off and cut around the car to get me out because I was that jammed in there. The police were preparing Johnny for the worst, that I wasn't going to make it to hospital alive. They tried to get a helicopter in to come get me, but I don't think there were any helicopters available at that point. So, yeah, I was rushed to hospital in a critical condition. No one thought I would survive the first night. Major crash was called to the scene. From there, I went into a coma for 2 weeks. In my coma, I had 2 major surgeries to fix my broken body. And from there, I just remember waking up. It was a bit hazy waking up. It took me 17 days post-amnesia to really come to terms with what happened. Well, not really come to terms, but realize what had happened for 17 days once I woke up out of my coma. I couldn't form new day-to-day memories. So for 17 days after waking up, the doctors, the nurses, my family, they had to constantly tell me what happened because I had no idea.
Do you remember this time?
It was a massive jolt to the head. So it took me a bit. Like I remember small things of after waking up. Like I remember waking up and looking at my legs and how big they were. And I remember seeing someone walk into my hospital room. I don't remember talking to them. I remember small fractions. My memory was quite shot, like quite bad at that point. It wasn't till I went to Hampstead Rehab into the brain injury ward. That's when I started becoming a bit more with it.
It must have been so scary though to not know what was going on properly. Or was it that the brain injury makes you not aware of what is happening?
I think the brain injury is such a jolt to the head. It takes a while to, I don't know, to come back around to. And I think also waking up out of a coma. I was in a coma for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I wasn't conscious. I think, you know, the higher medication I would have been on, I think it's a mixture of things of, yeah, it took a bit.
I can imagine. So do you know what actually caused the accident?
So I wasn't doing anything wrong. I wasn't drink driving. I wasn't on my phone. I was following the road rules and this still happened to me. The police think that I must have swerved for a kangaroo. That's why I overcorrected. You know, I haven't done a driving defense course. I still want to go do a driving defense course because they teach you how not to overcorrect. And I think we should all know how not to do that. You know, we see wildlife and we swerve for it.
Yep.
And not a couple of days after my accident, Johnny and his family around that area just kept seeing kangaroos. So very Australian, isn't it? I swerved for a kangaroo.
Is it good to have not done anything wrong? Or would you have preferred to have known, okay, yeah, I looked at my phone and so I won't look at my phone anymore and therefore it won't happen again? Like I can imagine that would be really scary and difficult to then move on knowing that you actually had done nothing wrong.
Yeah, I think my story has a good perspective when I tell it now because I have the perspective of I wasn't doing anything wrong and this happened to me. Imagine if you were doing the wrong thing because I mentor and know so many people who they were doing the wrong thing and now their life has changed forever. And I think they hold a bit of anger to themselves because they've done this to themselves some extent. But it's also, you know, there's so many factors. A lot of the people that I know through car accidents as well, half the time they weren't even doing anything wrong. Someone has hit them and that would be, that's when you would hold the most anger when you have caused harm to someone else's life, hitting someone else on the road. So I don't really, I'd rather not be doing the wrong thing.
So I know that there is a time frame for when the emergency services will say that they think you may be able to come out of an accident like this. And I know you went way over that before you were found and helped. So what was the prognosis that your family was given at the time?
Yeah, for the first night, they were told that I wasn't going to make it. I had so many injuries. They didn't think I would. They didn't even think I'd make it to hospital alive after getting me out of the car because the femur bone is the hardest bone in the body to break and it releases some type of toxin that could kill you when broken. And that's what the police were telling Johnny, that I'm not even going to make it to hospital. The first night was very play-by-play, that my whole family ended up camping out in the waiting room. They just slept there, stayed there the whole night waiting to see how I would go. And the two surgeries I had while I was in my coma, they were classed as second trauma surgery. So that was very risky to have those surgeries as well. So a lot when I was in my coma was kind of play-by-play to see how I'd go.
So what were your injuries from the accident?
Never broke a bone in my body before my accident. So I went
all out. So you did a good job.
I did a good job. I broke both my legs, my femur bones. I shattered my pelvis. I broke multiple vertebrae in my spine. I fractured my right hip and tailbone. I broke multiple vertebrae in my spine. And I had brain bleeds and shearing of the brain, which left me with a severe traumatic brain injury.
Wow. Wow. I didn't realize there were so many injuries. My goodness.
Yeah.
So your rehab, even when you were able to, when you came out of the coma and you were able to start doing things, where do you start when you've got so many injuries?
When I came out of the coma, I went into ICU for a while, and then they took me to Hampstead Rehab into the brain injury ward, and I couldn't believe what was happening at that point, because I thought my physical injuries far outweighed my head injury. I thought my physical injuries were a lot more. I didn't really understand what my brain injury was at that point. So it was a range. I had speech therapy, occupational therapy, physiotherapy, psychology. I've had everything. The early stages of being in rehab, it was just as simple as learning to roll onto my tummy again after shattering my pelvis. And at that time, I was in a wheelchair. So, you know, taking small steps and standing, having enough strength to stand up, they were massive things for me. With my brain injury, when I woke up out of my coma, I kept forgetting words. I couldn't put a sentence together, and I was very monotone. So it took a lot to, you know, I couldn't, my memory, everything was so bad. My speech therapist from day dot and my physiotherapist, do you know what? It was both. It was everything. And with my brain injury, my balance was affected. So not only trying to walk, but also my balance being affected. I looked like Bambi with the two walking sticks when I finally was able to get onto my two walking sticks. It made it a lot harder to stand up, learn to walk, everything again.
Wow. I can just imagine how overwhelming that would be. You have so many things that you needed to work on. How did you deal with that at the time? Like, how did you keep going?
I feel like I was very determined. I think I had, you know, my age on my side. Being a lot younger, I would heal a lot quicker. Honestly, it was frightening being in the brain injury ward. Like I said, 2 weeks before this, I was celebrating my 22nd birthday, and now I'm in a brain injury ward. It was terrifying. But I knew that the only way to get me out of this was to do this, was to put in the work. I had my physios and I had the recovery team around me, but they can only do so much. It had to come from me. So I honestly don't even know. I just had to do what I had to do to get better.
Yeah, you dug deep and kept going.
Definitely, yeah.
Were the professionals around you giving you any hope?
Yeah, I think they were, yeah. They were giving me hope, but I didn't really know what hope was either. I didn't have anyone around me at that point in the brain injury ward who was young, who had gone through something similar to me. They were a lot older, so I couldn't relate to anyone. I genuinely didn't know anyone on social media that had gone through the same thing. I had no one to look up to. I had no one to know it was going to get better with the brain injury, with my physical injuries. I didn't know. So I did have hope, but oh my God, knowing someone who has gone through the same thing, I wish I had that when I was in brain injury, because that would have helped me a lot.
Was that part of the reason why you decided to start mentoring?
100%. It was healing for me going back and mentoring. When I could finally walk again, I went back there straight away because it was healing for me, but it was also, it was a great way of meeting people who had gone through the same thing. It was exactly what I needed to meet other people exactly going through the same thing.
I'll talk a bit more about that as we go along. But
yeah.
As you started to improve a bit, You were then able to go home. What was it like going home and going back into the real world?
Going back into the real world, I was honestly at that point, I'd been in rehab for a month. So it took around 2 months until I went home after my accident. And I was so bloody keen to leave and go home. I was keen for my own bed. I was keen just to be in my own space. But it wasn't till I left that I realized how different it was and how hard it was, because being in rehab, you have everything around you. You have your therapies, you have everything. When you leave rehab and you go home, you have to get into a car to go to all your therapies. And that for me was massive, because I would not get in a car. My friends, you know, I think when you leave hospital, when you leave rehab, people think, oh, she's better now or she's fine. But I was just starting my recovery then. Everything had changed. I couldn't stay in the shower. I couldn't get out of bed. I didn't want to go out with friends. My life had completely changed. So I fell into quite a very dark space at that point for a while.
How did you get yourself out of that, do you think?
It took a while. It did. It took a while. But I think with little things, I think first of all, I needed to, on social media, I needed to surround myself and only see positive things. I went through and unfollowed and deleted a lot of people who didn't have a positive impact in my life. And I started following inspirational people who had gone through something and that are real on social media, because you see a lot of edited and filtered stuff. I needed something real. I needed the most inspiring people to look up to. And yeah, I started with that. And then from there, I don't know, I think I just reached a point where I realized that I had to put in the work to get better, or, you know, my relationship at the time was struggling. My mental health was struggling. I think I realized through my psychology at that point that, yeah, I needed to put in the work to better my life. And that was my motivation.
That's a lot to deal with, because you've still got your physical injuries as well that you have to deal with on top of your life and everything else that's going on in your life, and trying to keep going and trying to keep up hope. I'd imagine that would be so much to deal with all at once.
Yeah. And from there, like, you know, friends fell off, everything. Like, everything when I went home had changed dramatically in so many areas of my life. So it was hard to stay positive, but yeah.
Were you seeing improvements in your physical health at the time as well? Like, how was that going along?
So I have a video now of my whole recovery that I share. It's, you know, me and my coma. It's me learning to walk again, because I videoed everything. I documented everything. And for me, like, you know, I'd meet people and I'd see people, like family members, and they'd say, you've changed so much, like you've gotten so much better, but I couldn't see it for myself. So I videoed it, I documented it. And for me, that was my way of saying I am getting better.
That's a great idea.
And I'm glad I did. And if anything, I wish that I documented more now. Like, I wish there's so much more that I think there's a big gap between when I was in that dark spot. You know, there's a couple photos of me in my wheelchair and there's a lot of me learning to walk on the two sticks, but there is a gap between that. There is a lot that people don't see. You know, photos only give you a glimpse second, or videos only give you a glimpse second of what my recovery was like.
Now, you were saying to me earlier that, so you can see the physical injuries, I guess. You can see your x-rays of the surgeries that you've had, but having a brain injury is often invisible and not easily seen. So I don't know if you could compare them, if that's the right word, but having a brain injury and then having the physical, I know the brain's part of the body, what would you call them, other bodily injuries that you've got. How do you think those two kind of compared in terms of how you dealt with them and how your recovery went?
I think, and do you know what, honestly, I still to this point, I need to pull myself back in line and remember, I think I put my physical, is it health? I'm not entirely sure what to call it, but yeah, I always put my physical health before my mental health. To this day, if I can't be active, if I can't move my body in some type of way, I break down crying. Because it takes me back to that dark spot where I couldn't do anything but lay in bed with a broken body, and that terrifies me to ever go back there. And, you know, there are days when I ring my friends absolutely in tears that, you know, I'm in so much pain that I need to have a rest day. So I'm still working on that with my psychologist, especially now I'm having another surgery in a month or so. The thought of that, my PTSD and anxiety around that is massive. And I need, my friends and my psychologist need to keep reminding me that my mental health, you know, have a mental health day, like work on the brain, work on my brain injury, because I definitely think I put my physical health a bit more before my mental health, which is not good. It needs to be both.
Is that, do you think, because you can see the physical injuries and you can see the recovery and see how they're progressing more than you can see the brain injury?
Yeah, no, it would be. And I think with my physical injuries, you know, being in my physio gym, that's when I feel the most empowered. That is how I learned to walk again. That is how that, you know, I think that's in some way how it's gotten me to here, that I'm able to do so much. And it makes me feel empowered being in the gym. It's one of the best ways to better myself. But I need to keep reminding myself there are so many ways that I could better myself within my mental health as well. You know, journaling, and there's so much that I could be doing as well in my mental health. And my anxiety and my PTSD, I definitely need to, yeah, take a seat back sometimes and remind myself my mental health is just as important.
Yeah, definitely. And how did you go about getting back in the car? I'd imagine that would have been terrifying.
You couldn't get me in a car. No one could get me in a car for a long time. It took a lot of sessions working with a psychologist, just talking about my fears and my anxiety, just getting into a car, let alone driving again. My grandma would drive me all to my appointments at the time. And yeah, I hated it, because after going back and mentoring so soon, and this is one thing, I needed someone inspiring to look up to. I needed to meet like-minded people or people that had gone through the same thing I did. But I hadn't dealt with what happened to me to go hear other people's stories of what happened to them. Because when I was seeing my psychologist, I was going through the stories I've heard. I wasn't going through my own story myself. So I think that, you know, was a massive trigger as to being in a car as well, of all the reasons how you can be in an accident. Even if you're doing the right thing, something could happen to you. So yeah, you definitely need to, before you help people, you need to help yourself first. And I've learned that now. It took a lot to get me in a car. It took, I think with a brain injury, you have to wait up to a year just to let your brain heal. And then you can go for your license and start doing driving sessions. So I worked with an occupational therapist driver, and we just did lessons around driving on country roads around where I crashed, driving on freeways again, like at high speed limits. And my anxiety around that was massive. It took a lot. And even when I did finally get my license back and I bought a car, I still didn't want to drive. My car would just sit there. It took a lot. I think I realized at a point though that driving is independence. That's where my independence come from. And I think at the time I was kind of just getting a little bit, all right, I need to do this for myself. I need to get back behind the wheel.
So how long do you think it took you with all of this to be able to feel like you were able to start getting back on with your life or your new life?
It's so hard because it's still ongoing, you know. I still can't run, I still can't jump, I still can't stand for long periods of time. I'm in pain in the winter. There's still so many factors from this crash that I still deal with on a daily basis. My brain injury. On Wednesday, I did a full day of study, and this is the invisible disability that no one sees, but I did a full day of study, and then that night I had something on, and between that, I came home and I just absolutely was in tears crying because I was so mentally exhausted. I couldn't do anything but cry, but I had to get ready because I had to go do something. And yeah, it's hard and it still affects me. So I'm finally at a point that it's hard because I'm 27 now. So that's 5 years of my life, of my 20s, that has been in recovery mode, that I've been healing. I haven't been traveling. I haven't been doing the things that I want to do in my 20s. I've been in recovery mode. So it's quite frustrating. And now that I'm booked in to have another surgery in a month or so, I got to go one step backwards to go forward. So I can't really answer that one if I'm still living it, I think.
Mm-hmm. You have come a long way though.
I have. I definitely have. I think the last couple of years, all my work that I'm doing in road safety, and now that I have reached a point that I have been able to have a social life again and I've been able to do things for me outside my accident. My partner at the time, we broke up probably 2 or so years ago and we're still on good terms, but oh my God, what we went through together, you know, him finding me in the car and going through the whole recovery with me, it was a lot at our age to go through together. And once we broke up, that was quite hard for me because I had to find myself through standing on my own 2 feet. Like I was going back out into the world. I didn't want to be a car accident girl. That's what I was known for. I needed to find who was Holly Scott. Who was I outside of my accident? My whole social media at that time was just my accident. I had to create a private account. I needed to have a life of my own outside of it. And I think that would have been the point that I started finding who I was outside of it and start somewhat living life again.
And who are you? Who is Holly Scott?
Still working that out. I know what I want to do. I love my work in road safety and that is a massive part of me. I have a very strong fire and passion towards all what I'm working towards, but I know I want to travel. Do you know what? My whole life is my accident though. Even what I'm studying now, I want to help other people who have gone through something similar. I want to be there for them, working with them hands-on. So I have found me outside of my accident, or I found me. But at the same time, I can't run from my accident. My accident is who I am now as well.
Well, it's always going to be a part of you, but it doesn't have to be everything.
No, definitely not. But I have. I've found a lot of good out of something so bad. I found my passion. I found my voice. Oh my God, I hated public speaking at school, but now like I love it. I love sharing my story. I love educating people about the dangers on the road. I love meeting like-minded people and being there for people who have gone through something. You know, I hated studying and now I'm back studying to, again, help other people. So, yeah.
Can I ask what you're studying?
So I was studying disability and development. But that is mostly going to make me in a case management role and I don't want to be a case manager. I don't want to be someone behind the scenes. I want to be hands-on helping someone through their recovery. So I changed over into allied health. So I can work along with physiotherapists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, and I can run through programs with those people. So I'm nearly done. I'm so excited, but I'm nearly done.
That's great.
Again, with even my study, with my brain injury, I have someone who helps me, my speech therapist who helps me with my concentration and all the things that I struggle with. So, yeah, I'm glad I have the help around me to get me to where I want to be.
That's great. Congratulations as well
for doing that. Thank you.
So can you tell us a bit more now? You touched on it earlier about your mentoring and what you were doing to try and help people after you left your rehab facility. Can you talk a bit about that and also what you're doing as a road safety ambassador with the police?
Yes, it's super exciting. So my mentoring, I did a lot of mentoring with the rehab I went to, Hampstead Rehab, working with people in the acute stage, like straight, you know, when I needed it, I was there for them. But now I've transferred over into Brain Injury SA where I go for a lot of my therapies still, and there's a mentor and then I think maybe one more mentor and a psychologist, and we run sessions like 10-week block programs called the Reconnect Transition Program. So people with a brain injury or that have been in a car accident can come in and we work through the program talking about, you know, PTSD and anxiety, getting back in a car, back to work, back to study, neuroplasticity, your challenges, and we kind of bounce things off each other of our coping mechanisms and how we work around things. So it is, it's really healing for me, and I gain something out of it every time I do it. I've done it so many times now. I've gained so many friendships out of it as well. And yeah, my road safety work is, I never imagined where I'd be within my road safety work. I know that, oh my God, I never would have imagined this. In 2019, the RAA reached out to me and they wanted me to be a part of Street Smart High, their event that they do at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre. That's talking in front of 8,000 school students.
Wow. And it's a lot of people.
Yeah, I hated public speaking, but I did it. I shared my story, and from there it kind of snowballed for me. I had the police commissioner watch me at the entertainment centre, and he tracked me down and he wanted me to be a part of their next road safety campaign. And this was what was really healing for me, because they did the road safety campaign based on me and my story. So we kind of, they did a new angle within a road safety campaign talking about the seriously injured statistic, because nobody sees that. Nobody sees how someone's life has changed, what they have to live with and do to recover. You see the deaths on the road, but nobody sees the seriously injured. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's frustrating, because that couple second headline of my accident, that's not just a couple second headline. I am not a couple second headline. Like, you don't see what I go through after that. So it was really healing. We filmed the surgeons, we filmed the paramedics, my physiotherapist, speech therapist, everyone within my accident, highlighting how many people it takes to save a life. And from there, yeah, I've just been announced as SAPOL's first ever road safety ambassador this year. So yeah, it's super exciting. I'm so honored that I'm in this position I am. So yeah, a lot coming up.
Well done.
Thank you. Yeah.
Now, is that campaign you're talking about, the Driven?
Driven, yeah. So Driven, it's a 7-part web documentary series. People can find it on YouTube. Yeah, it's really good. I had a lot of people reach out to me. I had parents reach out to me. I had school teachers reach out to me. I had people who had gone through something themselves and seen the inspiring side of it. It's so close to my heart, that campaign, and it always will be. I have no words for it, really, how much it means to me.
It's incredible what you've been able to do, and the fact that they tracked you down as well. That's wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been good. Like, I've turned this into something, you know. Like, last year I went with the REA to Darwin to keep sharing my story at the entertainment centre over there. It's literally at the end of this month that I'm talking with them again. I've done it a bunch of times now. I've grown so much as a person, constantly sharing my story. You know, it can be taxing, because I do, like, it's not just a story. Like, this is my personal story. This is showing my x-rays. Everything went so big on the news stations and everything. Like, I think it did give me a bit of anxiety. But I do want that message to get across, and I do have such an impact with the kids. You know, within that video that I share, I think it's more visual for the kids to see. There's Snapchat filters, there's all that's in there that's quite relatable to kids as well. They're not just seeing somebody talking, they're actually seeing a bit about what I went through. So, yeah.
So when you do your road safety talks, what are some of the key messages that you want to get across through your story?
There are so many key messages that I have, but mostly nobody is invincible on the road. It takes seconds for something to go so wrong in a car. You know, I wasn't even doing anything wrong and this happened to me. Imagine if you were doing the wrong thing. The seriously injured statistic, you know, even if you survive that crash, your injuries could be life injuries. So it doesn't mean that you can get lucky and survive.
So what do you hope for? You've got a lot going on, obviously. Yeah. You're going to finish your studies. You're going to keep helping people. But what do you hope for your future as Holly Scott?
Personally, first of all, I really do want to travel. You know, 5 years of my life, of my 20s, has been my accident. I really would love to go traveling and see a bit of the world while I can. Within my road safety stuff, well, I really want to finish my study. My study is nearly finished, so I really want to get into a job where I can finally start helping people in that type of way. Within my road safety stuff, I'm now working with a company who's going to help me have a more of a reach, have more of, turn this into a business. The last 2 months, I've been flying to Melbourne to work with the Victorian police now. I had the police commissioner talk to me the other day, and he was saying that I'm the only road safety advocate there is in the country, and how what? I should be doing. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. So he was like, you need to do something with that outside of SAPOL. So it's a lot to do on my own. I don't even know where to start. I have a lot of people and a lot of support around me. But yeah, so I'm now working with this company that I'm creating a website. I want to have more of a reach. And they were telling me how, you know, I could start in road safety, and they think I might be able to eventually one day maybe go into inspiring speaking, motivational speaking, talking about, I guess, those dark days. So there's a lot I could do within this, and I'm only just getting started. There are so many things that I'm wanting to do and accomplish within this space. So, yeah. Watch this space, yes.
Yeah, because I know it is around road safety, but your story is super inspiring. It's not just about road statistics and all of that. It is your personal journey too. And, you know, like everyone I've had on this podcast sharing their story, it's a story, and it is. Yeah. It's inspiring to other people to see that, you know what, you can go through something terrible or challenging and you can come out the other end. And yeah, maybe you're not the same. Maybe you're not 100% healed physically, but you can still have a good life, and you can have a better life sometimes too than what you had 100. Before.
Yeah. And I think the people I look up to are people like us. I think the strongest people I know are the people who have gone through something and they've come out the other end, or have a positive mindset considering what they've gone through, you know. They're the people I want to surround myself with. They're the people I look up to the most.
I 100% agree.
Mm.
So before we finish up, what are some things that you have learned through the challenges that you faced, or how have you changed for the better?
I think I know who I am. I think I know what I do and don't tolerate. I don't want to surround myself with, you know, negative people or people that drain me. I want to surround myself with people that lift me up and have a positive impact on my life. So I definitely think I know what I do and don't want to tolerate anymore. And I think I've learned that for every dark day, there's a brighter day coming. There's light at the end of the tunnel. It does get better. You can work towards having a better life. For so long after my accident, I didn't see light for a very long time, and I didn't think it was going to get better. Yeah, I hope people know that. I hope people know that it can get better through all the dark days.
So I do have one final question that I ask everyone at the end of their interviews, and it may be similar to what you've just said, but we'll see. If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Take a different route that day of driving.
Oh.
No, that's such a good question. I think Holly, before my accident, I don't think she was very aware of the challenges and the obstacles that life can have, and, you know, how hard life can be, and how I think I was quite oblivious. I think I had no idea what life was going to be. There's so many things I'd love to tell.
Well, say multiple Holly. Things.
Yeah. There's a lot I'd want to say to Holly after accident, but I don't really know what I'd want to say to the Holly before. Her life is just starting.
Well, what would you say to Holly after the accident then?
Hold on. I know it's hard right now, but it does get better. And all the hard work you're putting in, you'll thank yourself for it later. It gets me emotional thinking about how broken I was then, and how I didn't think it was going to get better. I had no one to know it was going to get better. Oh, sorry, I'm getting emotional.
No, don't say
even
sorry.
Thinking about it. But I know past Holly, that girl with a broken body laying in hospital, even after, when I went home, just losing friends and losing the people around me, and not knowing what my life was going to be, like, I know she would be so proud of the person I am. But I know that me right now, future Holly, I'm so proud of my past self for not giving up, and I'm so proud of myself for all the hard work I put in to get me to where I am today.
Well, you're going to make me emotional. I'm so happy that you did put in all that work and you are where you are today. And I'm so excited to see what you have coming up in the future, because
thank you.
You're absolutely incredible. What you've been through, how you've got to where you are today. And I really, really appreciate you sharing your story with me today and with all everyone listening. So thank you so much for being here today.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great talk. I've enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspirational Tales. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you could please share it with your family and friends so that we can inspire more people. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review, and make sure that you have subscribed or followed the podcast on whichever platform that you are listening to it on so that you can stay up to date as new episodes are released. Thanks again, and I look forward to you joining me for the next episode of Inspirational Tales.